You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss. A very good Saturday morning to you. And as always, crossing now to Washington, D.C., to our U.S. Bureau Chief, Simon Marks. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks again for joining us here. Let's go to some news overnight for us anyway. The Senate Republicans are panning President Joe Biden's latest infrastructure proposal and may offer, you know, something new.
Well, they did offer something new this afternoon here in relatively late news that we've received from the White House. Let's just rewind a bit. As you know, President Biden initially proposed a roughly $2 trillion spending package on infrastructure. The Republicans said, no, that's way too much. They didn't want to spend more than about $800 billion, and they much more narrowly defined infrastructure than President Biden did. The president then went back to the Republicans and said, all right, I'll take $500 billion out of my proposal. Can we agree to a roughly $1.5 trillion deal? The Republicans said no. There has been ongoing discussion between President Biden and one particular Republican, Senator Shelley Moore Capito. And those conversations continued today because the White House insists that President Biden is searching for, I suppose, what you could argue is that most elusive goal here in Washington, D.C., and that is a bipartisan deal between not just Democrats and the White House, but some Republicans and the White House as well in a bid to get this through. And of course, in a 50-50 Senate, as the current situation is, with Republicans and Democrats basically evenly poised in the Senate, Joe Biden needs to get some Republican support for this measure. The whole thing this afternoon appears to have fallen apart. We've got a message from the White House press secretary, a statement from the White House press secretary saying that there was a telephone conversation between the president and Senator Capito this afternoon. She conveyed that the Republican group that she represents were willing to put another $50 billion into the pot. President Biden expressed his gratitude for her effort and goodwill, but indicated that the current offer did not meet his objectives, namely growing the economy, tackling the climate change crisis, and creating new jobs. This statement holds a glimmer of hope for next week. The president and the senator have agreed to talk again on Monday, and there's talk about trying to find ways of achieving a more substantial package. But there's a bit of political danger in all of this now for President Biden. On the campaign trail last year, he was absolutely clear that his 45 years on Capitol Hill, his visceral understanding, not just of the legislative process, but of how to navigate the corridors of power up on Capitol Hill, meant that he uniquely was going to be able to reach out across the aisle and work with Republicans. And at the time, you know, you and I discussed it at the time, in this highly polarized atmosphere that Washington is today, it was always a dubious proposition. And what's been happening this week is that the Republicans essentially have been toying with him like a cat toying with a mouse. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the president to continue wandering down this avenue much further, especially given at the end of next week, he'll be packing his bags and heading to Europe for the G7 summit in the UK, and then meetings with EU and NATO chiefs, as well as, of course, as his summit meeting with President Vladimir Putin. At a certain point, he's not going to be able to be negotiating this because he's going to have to take his focus elsewhere. So what they're going to do with this infrastructure plan, I think, is very open to question. The White House may well say, well, he's going to try and do this with just the support of Democrats, but that is a much tougher mountain to climb, even than the mountain that he's trying to climb right now. So at the end of this particular week, there's definite obstacles in the way of Joe Biden, and they consist of the mountain that he faces in trying to bring Republicans across to back him on some of these key planks of his agenda that he wants to advance.
A large mountain. Well, Simon, let's go to President Trump now. And back in January, he was barred indefinitely from Facebook and Instagram. But now Facebook has come up with an actual timeline of 2 years.
Yeah, and remember, what's happened between January and now is that Facebook's independent oversight board said to Mark Zuckerberg's conglomerate, well, you can't do what you've done, because nowhere in the Facebook rules does it allow you to leave President Trump in limbo. There's no such thing as an indefinite suspension. You have to tell him either that he's off the platform completely forever, or you have to tell him when his account is going to be reinstated. So today, Facebook responded to that, saying that Donald Trump will remain off Facebook and Instagram for the next 2 years. He may be able to return in January of 2023, subsequent to further conversations and a further review. That means a couple of different things. First of all, it means that Donald Trump will be off social media in the United States to all intents and purposes throughout next year's midterm congressional election campaign. Remember, November 2022, we've got one third of the Senate and the entire House of Representatives up for grabs. And Donald Trump wants to be a dominant voice, a kingmaker in many of those races on the campaign trail. Indeed, this decision by Facebook, which he slammed today as an insult and abuse, was handed down on the eve of the former president returning to the stage, quite literally. He's going to be hosting a rally this weekend in North Carolina, the first of many. His top in a bid to prove that he is the undisputed leader of the Republican Party. Well, he's going to have to communicate with people in other ways, because he's obviously off Twitter for good. And now will be off Facebook and Instagram all the way through until after those midterm elections. But the other thing it means, the flip side of the coin for Donald Trump, is that he'll be back on Facebook and Instagram just as the 2024 presidential election campaign here is gearing up and moving into a high gear. And of course, if former President Trump does seek to run again for the presidency in 2024, as may well be the case, then he could be back on two pretty powerful social media platforms to continue spreading his message. At the White House today, usually they hesitate to comment on this. They insist it's private company business, and they don't like giving President Trump very much attention from the White House podium. But the press secretary, Jen Psaki, said today to reporters that it's always very difficult for a zebra to change its stripes. She said, we'll see what happens over the course of the next 2 years. But she clearly indicated that those social media platforms are better off from the president's perspective without the contributions of former President Donald Trump. But certainly interesting timing, this move by Facebook, coming as it does just as he is getting ready to try and reinsert himself into the public conversation.
Very interesting. You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Miles, speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's talk vaccines now. US giving 80 million vaccine doses to priority nations such as Latin America, Africa, etc. 75% of those via the COVAX program.
Yeah, and they're doing it in two tranches. So 25 million vaccines are going out of the door immediately. Indeed, the White House announced today that a million doses, I think of Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they said, have now been delivered to South Korea. So you've got 25 million doses of surplus vaccines that the United States is no longer planning to use domestically, leaving immediately, and another 55 million doses in a few weeks' time. As you said, three quarters of of them will be given to COVAX, the internationally backed distribution facility, and they will distribute them around the world. The Biden administration has given some indication it wants, you know, 7 million doses of vaccine earmarked for Asia and 6 million doses of vaccine earmarked for Africa, but it's going to leave it up to COVAX to determine the precise recipients and numbers. And then the other 25% of doses that the US is not giving to COVAX, the Biden administration is holding back essentially for, if you like, family and friends, neighbors, Canada and Mexico, allies and partners of the United States, Ukraine, India, South Korea and others. Now, the White House made the point over the last few days that unlike Russia and China, President Biden, they say, is not trying to secure favors as he hands these vaccines out. The inference being that the Russian and the Chinese vaccine diplomatic efforts have absolutely been all about trying to secure favors in parts of the world where Russia and China have made investments. I mean, it's not entirely clear that that claim by the White House stands up to scrutiny, because you do have, 6 million doses immediately being earmarked for countries that the United States deems, for example, neighbors. But when it uses that word, it means Canada and Mexico. It doesn't, for example, mean Cuba, Venezuela or Brazil, one country to the south of the U.S. that desperately needs more vaccines. But of course, President Biden has no working political relationship with President Jair Bolsonaro in Sao Paulo. So I think questions for the White House abound about that, and more broadly for the United States, questions this week about where the vaccine program is going domestically, because demand for vaccines in the United States is ebbing substantially to the point where President Biden's target of getting 70% of Americans jabbed with at least one shot by Independence Day on July the 4th is now beginning to look a little bit problematic. So the White House launched this month of action this week in a bid to spur the number of people out there that are getting vaccinated, with all sorts of new incentives, more free beer, more money being thrown at people in lotteries all over the country. I mean, it is quite an extraordinary dichotomy, this. On the one hand, the rest of the world clamoring for American vaccines, and President Biden having to plead with Americans and points this week that people all over the world want these vaccines, but they're earmarked for you, and you really need to go out and get the shots. And that's a pretty extraordinary point at which the White House now finds itself.
Yeah. Well, Simon, before we talk about the jobs report, the healthy jobs report for May, let's just touch on UFOs. US finding no evidence that UFOs came from outer space, and also over 120 cases remaining unexplained.
Yeah, I know I'm giggling, but I really shouldn't be, because this is actually a serious story. This report that has been compiled by the Department of Defense and the Director of National Intelligence here was requested by Congress because there have been, over the last several years, more than 120 sightings of what you and I, Justine, would call UFOs, but apparently they're now known as unidentified aerial phenomena. That if you look at some of the Navy videos, show completely inexplicable craft rotating at high speeds, traveling at hypersonic speeds that no known man-made technology has ever been able to achieve. And there are so many of these reports and videos to back them up that members of Congress said, we need an investigation into this because, you know, there's a potential national security issue. So the report has concluded that there is no evidence to prove that these craft are anything other than man-made, but equally, there is no evidence to prove that they're not. In other words, the report says, well, there's no evidence to show that they are alien spacecraft, but equally there's no evidence to show they're not alien spacecraft. The report does suggest that this has nothing to do with any kind of secret US military program, as some had surmised. It denies that. There are some intelligence chiefs who are raising the possibility that perhaps other countries have secret military programs that we don't know anything about that have created these extraordinary craft. But it's definitely an ongoing mystery, and one that is being fed by the report that's been put together, with some senior figures up on Capitol Hill saying that there now needs to be a congressional investigation, committees of Congress getting involved, and that this now needs to be taken much more seriously at higher levels of government. It's interesting, every time the question is raised at the White House, there's sort of, you know, laughter in the briefing room and laughter from the White House press secretary. But, you know, the fact remains, they can't explain what these things are. And they're definitely out there. There's no question. This isn't sort of like the old pictures of Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster that have been discredited. These are definitely some kind of aerial phenomena that the military and the intelligence agencies here can't explain.
Bizarre. Let's finish, Simon, with the US jobs report for May, adding almost 560,000 jobs, hiring picked up and unemployment falls.
Yes, and President Biden hailed that today, went into the briefing room, said that it showed the strength of the recovery. 559,000 new jobs added last month. But, and there is a caveat to all of this, there are still employers all over the country who are finding it incredibly difficult to fill vacancies. And there's been a big discussion here today, fueled by some comments by Biden administration insiders, who are beginning to suggest that perhaps the extension in unemployment benefits that came in the spending bill a few weeks ago relating to COVID-19 are resulting in some people not actively planning immediately to return to the labor market. And in 90 days time, when those benefits begin to expire, will that then create the kind of movement and change that everybody is seeking in order to fuel the recovery? I mean, there really are millions of open vacancies. And I mean, I can tell you from a personal perspective, my elder teenager is working now after literally a two-question interview at an area restaurant. I mean, I think once they established that, you know, he could stand upright and speak in full voices, he was immediately taken on because they've got no means of filling many of these vacancies. The markets were positive today. Dow Jones Industrial Average ended up half a percentage point in value. The NASDAQ just over three-quarters of a percentage point in the S&P 500 just over three quarters of a percentage point in value, and the NASDAQ had a good day, almost 1.5 percentage points up. So the market's definitely buoyed by what they heard today, but there are still questions about what is happening structurally to the workforce in the United States, and has the pandemic resulted in some people saying, well, you know, this working from home thing, I quite like it. I've got no plans really to return to an office anytime soon. Other people saying, I've got these unemployment benefits for another 60 to 90 days. Is that actually having a medium to long term impact on the economy structurally, or will we get over that as we head towards the autumn here?
Just good figures to see, though. And Simon, thank you once again for joining us here in Singapore and keeping us updated.
Thanks, Justine. Talk to you tomorrow.
Speaking there with our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks.